It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. The usual players are here as always. That would be me, Chris Sheeran. Joe Auriemma, the godfather of YesNetwork.com. And our special guest star today, Eric Boland from Newsday, beat writer for the Yankees. You could also follow him on Twitter, eBoland11. That's at eBoland11. Eric, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Chris, good to be with you. Thanks.
No problem. One of the many beat writers that travels with the New York Yankees. So let's talk about the Yankees, shall we? Yesterday, or I should say opening day, for those of you listening to this maybe next week, and I say yesterday, you could say, Chris, what are you talking about? But opening day, Eric, as this is not live, was a tremendous success for the Yankees. CC Sabathia, you know, you got to give him a little bit of a break. It was 39 degrees, him and Justin Verlander pitching in that weather and hitting in that weather. But one person it didn't really bother was Curtis Granderson, who had a great spring, as you saw down there in Tampa, and he followed up with a great opening day.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, you couldn't have asked for anything more than Granderson, and also considering the fact that really when we left Tampa Tuesday afternoon after the last spring training game of the season, you really, to use the NFL categorization of whether somebody's going to play or and their probability, you would have categorized Granderson as being doubtful for opening day. And certainly 5 days before that, it looked like there was almost no chance that he was going to be ready, but he came through a simulated game on Tuesday fine, and then Wednesday in a minor league game, he was really good. I still thought that maybe because the off day after opening day and the weather forecast, that they would just give him the extra couple of days off, but obviously he came through the minor league game Wednesday just fine, and they felt that he was ready, and you got the test right off the bat, the second batter of the game when he came in to catch the sinking line drive, and kind of simultaneously you watched for two things after he made that catch. You zeroed in on Granderson to make sure that there wasn't any grimace or didn't come up holding on to anything, particularly the rib cage, and then you also swung your head in the direction of the Yankee dugout to see what Joe Girardi's reaction would be. And I think you could see him breathe a sigh of relief when Granderson popped right up and had a smile on his face.
Absolutely. And another guy we got to talk about, obviously, is Mark Teixeira. He's known to get off to very slow starts. And that three-run home run should, you know, everybody says he has bad Aprils. Unfortunately for him, the home run, tongue-in-cheek, came in March. But getting that home run for him mentally has to help prepare him for the April he has ahead of him, no?
Well, you know, he had the joke after the game saying that he had been conditioning Major League Baseball to start the season in March for a few years now. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's easy to take the one day and say, okay, well, now he's ready to take off. But, you know, he goes 0-for-4 in, you know, games 2 and 3, and all of a sudden you're going to hear all the, well, he's off to another slow start, which is not necessarily fair either. You just sort of have to let it play out. Now, look, he altered his off-season routine and his spring training routine, and one of the things that he did in the spring was, and he said, anytime he had an extra 15 minutes here and there, in past springs he would spend that time in the weight room. This year he spent any extra time that he had in the cages with Kevin Long, the hitting coach. And so, you know, he decided, and he hit a lot more before spring training, he said, all in the attempt to get off to a faster start. The only thing about that is you know, if you ask him, is it going to pay off in an honest moment, he'll say, I don't know. We've got to see. He thinks it's going to pay off. Opening day was an indication that maybe it might, but you still really need to get 2, 3, 4 weeks into the season before you can say that, you know, he's put the whole slow start thing behind him.
And the other storyline, obviously, Eric, is the back end of that bullpen, the 8th and 9th inning, Rafael Soriano and Mariano Rivera, and boy, did they look shut down yesterday.
Chris, it's the formula for the Yankees this year, or at least until they make some kind of a deal for the back end of the rotation, which I expect is going to happen, you know, 2 months into the season or right before the trade deadline, you know, at some point in the first half of the year. Until then, you heard it all spring and you heard it before spring training that with the addition of Soriano and the other arms in that bullpen, the Yankees being able to, quote, shorten the game. And you saw it yesterday. Sabathia, normally, who gives you 7-8 innings, you know, through a lot of pitches for him on opening day. I mean, he's a guy that routinely will go 115, 120.
Yeah, and he wanted to go more, but they basically told him, you know, it's a long season, CC.
Exactly. It's 40 degrees. It's a long season. 107 pitches is enough. And, you know, they were certainly, most of the innings were not easy innings. I mean, I think it would be difficult to debate Joe Girardi on that particular decision. But look, you know, so he comes out after 6 innings. You get Jabba Chamberlain threw the ball very well. He hands the ball off to Soriano to Rivera. You know, the next game, it could be David Robertson in that 6th or 7th inning, maybe Boone Logan, depending on who's coming up. But, you know, the Yankees feel that they have the arms to be able to, again, shorten the game. And if you just offensively hang around or have a lead, you know, in that 5th, 7th inning, you know, Yankees feel real good about their chances, and that formula certainly came to fruition, you know, in a very positive light or in a very positive sense on opening day.
Right.
Couldn't have asked for much more. I mean, there's nine batters, you know, 9 up, 9 down the last 3 innings.
Right. Can't get any better than that, actually. How about A.J. Burnett moving forward this year? Do you expect – I'm just asking a gut feeling what you saw in Tampa in spring training. Do you expect him to turn things around this year?
I do, but I'll hedge my bets a little bit with it, because everybody in that, besides the back end of the rotation, Chris, the most, you know, the predominant question of the spring was A.J. Burnett, and for good reason, of course, coming off the year that he had a year ago. I believe he will have a bounce-back season, but then you get into another layer of that, and you say, well, how do you define a bounce-back season? Almost anything he does is going to be better than what he did a year ago, 10-15 with a 5.26 ERA. He pitches 500 with a 4.5 ERA. Technically, that would be a rebound season. I think that the question is how big of a rebound a season is he going to have? I think it's going to be a rebound season, but I'm not sure it's going to be drastic to the point where we're talking about 17, 18 games and a 3.2 or a 3.3 ERA. I mean, keep in mind, Burnett in his career has only won more than 15 games once. So, you know, I hate this cliche, but I'll use it. I think he's kind of established he is who he is.
Right.
Now, I think what you could see is something very similar to what Burnett gave the Yankees in his first year in 2009, which was 13-9 and an ERA right around 4. And I think the Yankees certainly would take that in a second. You'd like to see the ERA a little bit lower from your number 2 starter, but you know, more often than not, he was still a streaky pitcher in 2009, but you didn't have near the sort of disastrous outings that you had a season ago. And you had a heck of a lot more good outings, you know, thrown in there. So I think Burnett's going to be better than he was, you know, last year. But the people that think he's suddenly going to, you know, develop into a pitcher that he's never been in his career before and suddenly be consistent and churn out, you know, 6, 7, 8 innings each and every time out the way CC Sabathia does, you know, I think you have to temper that a little bit with some realism, because he is 34 years old, and I don't think he's going to go through a drastic change of exactly the type of pitcher that he is. I know that's a real long answer, and the short answer to it is yes, I do believe he'll have a rebound season, but you know, not quite as dramatic as some people.
Well, people want to hear from you, Eric, because you cover the team and your analysis. I mean, we want you to break it down as much as you can, and that was a terrific answer. And let me just end my questioning here before I hand it off to my partner in crime, Mr. Auriemma, with this last one. It's about the rotation, too. I think the lineup is pretty much going to produce runs for this team. It's basically the same lineup with a better bench than last year. The question marks are, you know, in the rotation. So what can we expect? Now, Phil Hughes won 18 games last season. He was the beneficiary sometimes of this offense that supported him in some of those 18 wins. Is it unfair to expect the same or more out of him this year? And how do you see Ivan Nova playing into the rotation as well?
Well, to take the first part of the question, I don't think it's unfair to expect that out of Hughes. The biggest question with him is, who exactly is he? I mean, we just talked about A.J. Brunett. We kind of know who he is based on his track record. He's 34 years old. Hughes is 24 years old, and he's pitched exactly one season, one full season as a starter. And it was two distinctive seasons. He had a tremendous first half, qualified for the All-Star game. His second half was not very good. And that includes the postseason. He pitched extremely well in Game 3 of the Division Series against Minnesota, but then lost two games against Texas and didn't pitch very well in either one of those games. So who exactly is he? Based on, you know, scouts and some talent evaluators that I talked to during spring training, including from other teams, they all like Hughes. They like his makeup. They like his demeanor. They like his stuff. An opposing scout, one concern that he had was that Hughes' velocity on his fastball was down a little bit in spring training. But another scout said, you know, look, a lot of power pitchers' velocity in the spring isn't what it's going to be once the regular season gets going. So, you know, the concerns really are there aren't a lot of them about Hughes. And I think he's going to have another pretty good season. And I think he's going to be a little bit more consistent than he was a year ago. Nova is another one where, look, last year had seven starts, showed signs of being very good, but then also showed signs that the third and fourth time through an order, he struggles a little bit. He was outstanding pretty much all spring. He had one hiccup of an outing, but then responded 5 days later by no-hitting the Orioles for six innings. So, you know, you like to see that out of a young guy. I think the bottom line is with Nova is, you know, the Yankees have fairly high expectations with him. They like him, but they would be a lot more comfortable if he was the fifth starter rather than the fourth starter.
Hey, Eric, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Hi, Joe.
Actually, my first question right off the bat, I know, you know, there's Eric Boland, and for the Yes Network, there's Bill Boland. Have you guys sat down and talked about, you know, the possible relation here?
Yeah, when we first met each other, we kind of, you know, circled each other and saw the name tags and you know, worked it out. But you know, my entire family background can basically be, you know, traced to Cleveland, and then actually, you know, kind of Chicago before that. But pretty much my entire family is from the Cleveland area. Yeah. I will say my grandfather on my father's side came through Ellis Island from Ireland in 1922, I want to say, or maybe 1921. I actually have a copy. I did this at Ellis Island. It was really kind of neat to see my grandfather's signature as a 18 or 19-year-old when he came through. But and you can get that stuff in their library. But at any rate, Bill, I believe, is from – most of his family's, you know, from New York, and
yeah, he's a Jersey guy through and through. I don't know if you've ever talked to him about that, but he's he's all Jersey, Eric. Let me tell you.
So I don't think we couldn't find any commonalities beside our last name.
All right. Well, going back to the Yankees, you know, I know you talked to Chris about Mark Teixeira, and you know he was in the cage a lot this spring with Kevin Long. One thing that Mark had said was that he worked a lot on, you know, hitting from the left side of the plate in spring, especially that he hit only .244 last year from the left side. You know, what can you say about, you know, his approach from the left side as opposed to the right side in this spring and going into this season?
Well, you know, I mean, he didn't. It's an interesting question because that's something that I don't recall him talking an awful lot about, you know, during the spring. I mean, most of the stuff was about, you know, his slow starts and,
right,
and how he kind of altered his off season approach. But He's a natural righty hitter, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so he's always kind of felt that his left-handed swing is the last to come, so to speak. It's a great mystery. And hitting, I think, is very much like putting in golf, mm-hmm. where it's a feel thing. It's something that can come as quickly as it goes, and it can go as quickly as it comes.
Right.
I talked to Teixeira right before camp broke earlier in the week, and he has high expectations. He's hopeful that things turn around this spring. But he said, "Hey, look, we're really not going to know until we're into the April. I can tell you, I think it's going to be better." But, until we get 3 weeks in or so, we really don't know for sure.
One pleasant surprise to a lot of Yankee fans yesterday, just, looking on Twitter, was the play of Russell Martin yesterday. A lot of the fans, liked that he had a lot of hustle yesterday. He seemed to have good communication with CeCe. What did you think of Russell Martin's debut yesterday with the Yankees?
Joe, I don't think it could have gone any better for him. I had a single that kind of got the Teixeira inning started. The anyone hit, he hit the 3-run homer and had the single and ended up stealing third, which was somewhat surprising because Martin talked all spring about kind of made fun of what a slow runner he was. But bottom line for him, I think anything you get out of him at the plate is a bonus.
Yeah.
Although he was an all-star back-to-back season, so if he recaptures that performance at the plate, that would be tremendous from the Yankees' perspective. But, he's got to be able to handle the pitching staff, got to be able to learn the pitching staff, needs to be able to throw runners out, block balls in the dirt. He wasn't tested from throwing out runner standpoint opening day, but, some of the balls in the dirt, he did a good job there. Most of the spring, he did a good job with that. And the thing to keep an eye on is that knee that had the meniscus tear that was repaired in December, and that slowed him a little bit at the start of the spring. But after he started playing in some games, you really didn't see any evidence that the knee was bothering him at all. So, it's a good debut for him, and he's critical. And you didn't read a lot in the spring because there are so many other issues that commanded attention, mainly having to do with the rotation. But mm-hmm. The Yankees behind him right now with Cervelli hurt are extremely thin. So they need Russell Martin to not only get off to a good start, but they need him to produce. They need him to stay healthy, and certainly opening day portended well for him.
You mentioned that behind Russell Martin it's kind of thin. I left, spring training camp on March 14th, and when I had left there, it seemed like Montero and Romine were going to be in a battle for that backup catcher spot, and it was going to be, the door was open for both of them to try to make this squad. What there at the end kind of established Gustavo Molina as the front runner, as opposed to the two guys that really were talked about all of spring training?
Well, Joe, really, it wasn't anything that Gustavo Molina did. It was all the things that Montero and Romine, more so Montero, didn't do. Because the job essentially was Montero's to lose after Cervelli got hurt. And that's pretty much exactly what he did. He lost it. Didn't hit it all, but that really wasn't the biggest concern because, the one thing the Yankees really are not concerned about with Montero is what he does with the bat. But he had made some huge strides early in camp and early on when the game started defensively, they felt. But then you talk to some, opposing team scouts as the games wore on, and they saw a regression in his skills behind the plate. Not to the degree where, people think, well, he's never going to be an everyday catcher.
Right.
But, I remember talking to one scout, and he said it was remarkable to him how after Cervelli got hurt and the job was right there on a tee for Montero to go out and grab, that he said that I was a little disappointed that he didn't go out and grab it.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, again, what he did from the defensive standpoint. Now, I thought it was interesting the way the Yankees, specifically Joe Girardi and Brian Cashman, answered questions right when Cervelli got hurt and then at the end when they decided to go with Molina. both Girardi and Cashman said when Cervelli got hurt that either Romine or Montero, there were tangible benefits to them playing once or twice a week at the big league level as a backup.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, 3.5, 4 weeks later, when neither really produced, it was, well, we believe they need to play every day.
Exactly.
And so, you know, there was a little bit of, there was a lot of inconsistency in those answers. The bottom line is regardless of you know, how the Yankees present it, and I don't expect Girardi, by the way, to, you know, I've seen some criticism of him for reversing course publicly on this. I don't expect, he has nothing to gain by trashing those two players and saying, yeah, they were just huge disappointments to him.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem with that. He's defending his players. That's one of the reasons why Girardi's so popular, you know, with his players. And so that's his job more so than what he necessarily says to the media on a day-to-day basis. But that said, you can't get away from the fact that, you know, Girardi and Cashman went from saying in early March, yeah, you know, Romine or Montero could certainly benefit by playing once or twice a week, to the other extreme of, we believe these guys have to play every day. Bottom line is neither Romine nor Montero, and again, Montero, it was his job, neither of them produced.
Right.
And the Yankees simply were not comfortable enough with either one, and so they chose Molina, who didn't do anything spectacular to win the job, but because he had caught, you know, previously in the majors, and only 13 games, by the way, we're talking about. You know, it's not
right.
like the we're not talking about Chad Mueller or something like this, but he had a little bit of big league experience, and they were just more comfortable with the known, so to speak, than what the unknown was with Montero or Romine.
Again, we're here with Eric Boland of Newsday. He's at eBoland11 on Twitter. Eric, one more from me. I just want to ask you, you know, I'm not one that likes predictions because I feel like anything can happen in baseball. It's a long season. Guys get nicked, they get bumps and bruises, and guys get injured, you know, a first start, and they could be out for the season. Looking at the American League East, I know everybody's, you know, high on the Red Sox, and they think the Yankees are going to be, you know, a contender, and everybody else is kind of bolstered except the Rays, who have, you know, come down to earth a little bit with, you know, losing a lot of free agents in the offseason. What do you think ultimately is going to play out in this American League East this season?
Well, in Newsday's baseball preview section, I have the Yankees winning the wild card. I think it's going to be a tight race with the Red Sox all year, and I think the Red Sox are going to be, you know, a couple of games better. And then I have the Yankees losing in the ALCS to the White Sox. But, you know, last year I had the Mariners going to the World Series, which might have been one of the worst baseball predictions of all time.
You're not the only one, so don't worry about it.
You're right. I mean, everybody, you know, I'm not a big predictions guy either because, you know, you just have no idea.
I also had the 49ers in the Super Bowl, by the way, but go ahead.
Did you, this past year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, are you a 49ers fan?
No.
Oh, it was just a hunch?
Just my gut feeling.
Okay, well,
which goes
sure
to show you that I don't do a lot of gambling.
No, I hear you on that one. I think the Yankees are going to be, you know, I think they're going to be fine. They're win the wild card. And look, since the wild card has come into existence, it's been proven over and over again, there's real no discernible difference between, in terms of advantage, to winning the wild card or winning the division. So from that standpoint, it's not a failure. But, you know, look, I think that the Yankees' margin for error is not as great because of the combination of them being an aging team, not a lot of depth behind some of that age, and the frailty of the rotation. As one scout said to me during spring training, he said, when a push comes to shove, who do you really trust in that rotation besides CC Sabathia? And the reality is, yeah, you know, you can say, okay, you know, we like Phil Hughes. We like A.J. Burnett to have a rebound year. We like the possibilities of what Nova can become. Freddie Garcia is a competitor in a battle. But, you know, that's all verbiage.
It
doesn't mean anything. And in the end, the only guy that you would hand the ball to and say, this is what we know we're going to get day in and day out,
CeCe,
is CeCe Sabathia. And so, you know, that alone, you know, I think that, you know, that there's potential there where if things don't go the right way, with this rotation, I could see this team missing the playoffs. The lineup is tremendous, one of the best in baseball without question. I expect them to, you know, lead the league, lead all of baseball in runs the way they did, you know, last year and the year before. The bullpen, I think, is the best in baseball as long as everybody's healthy and Feliciano comes back. But again, the pitching staff, if you're ranking the pitching staffs in the American League, I don't think right now, and again, this, you know, this all changes and it does change, but right now, early on, right after opening day, I don't think they're any better than, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th in the American League if you're ranking the rotation.
Well, but you brought up a good point there, Eric. And before we let you go, I just want to hammer that point home. This will change. It is a long season. It's 162 games over a 6-month period. You know, if you're a Yankee fan, you have to keep your collective panties out of a bunch after the first month. You can't really go nuts, and I'm really speaking to the people on Twitter because I kind of liken it to, you know, my bald head is the lighthouse of hope. I'm just always positive. I can't help it because with this team, you can't really be – there aren't too many negatives. The rotation, yeah, you kind of scratch your head a little bit this season, but – you know, with the lineup the way it is, it's one of the best lineups in baseball. They got one of the best bullpens in baseball, as you just said. I just really think when it comes to rooting for a baseball team, no matter who it is, you have to pace yourself.
Look, there's no question about it. I mean, Brian Cashman has the best line of all about baseball in New York, and he said it's 162 one-game seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best synopsis I've ever heard when it comes to baseball in this city. And look, I'll ask, you know, both of you guys, you know, this question, I guess it's kind of a rhetorical question, but who, and this is talking about how things change, who on this date a year ago predicted that Cliff Lee was going to be on the trading block midseason?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And you know, we're joking about my horrendous prediction of the Mariners being a series, but, you know, people saw Cliff Lee, Felix Hernandez at the top of that rotation and saw great things ahead for the Mariners. So,
I did with you. So
nobody on April 1st of 2010 it was even conceptualizing that Cliff Lee was going to get dealt or could even be dealt, you know, mid-season. So,
well, who knows what the future holds? And, you know, Brian Cashman always pulls the trigger.
He always pulls the trigger, and they've got depth in the farm system to get one of those guys. But again, somebody like that has to become available. Who it's going to be, I have no idea. But, you know, the Yankees do have the pieces in their farm system to make that kind of a deal. And if they're, you know, 8 games out and 4 games out of the wild card, you know, mid-season or 2 months in or 2.5 months in, whatever, you know, the Yankees have the wherewithal, and there's only, you know, a handful of teams that can do this, to make that big blockbuster in-season, you know, deal. So, you know, there are concerns about the rotation, but it's not a completed product just because the season has started. And, you know, if it needs fixing, then it'll get fixed. And,
right.
And maybe Garcia turns out to be a shock and a revelation, and Nova, you know, is able to complete games, whereas last year, as we talked about the third and fourth time through, he didn't. Maybe Burnett has the rebound year. Maybe we get a full season of the first half of Phil Hughes from last year. CC Sabathia does what he did, and, you know, boom, 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 all of a sudden, you know, a month or 2 months in, we're talking about one of the best rotations in baseball. You just, it's a cliche, but you just don't know.
You and I have to go to a tarot card reader that has a crystal ball so we could get all these answers now so we look like geniuses when they come true. Eric Bolin, thank you very much for your time. Just let everybody know where we could find your columns and your blogs on the great thing that Al Gore invented called the Internet.
Yeah, it's on newsday.com/sports.
Okay.
And as you mentioned, on Twitter, eBoland11.
And don't forget the little at sign in front of eBoland11. Hey, listen, we really appreciate your time, Eric. Great stuff. We really appreciate you breaking down the bombers, as it were. And we look forward to talking to you later in the season as well. You've been listening to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Joe and I and another special guest will see you next week. Take care, everybody.